Hi, and welcome to the Urban Homesteader Podcast, where I'm your host, Samantha McClure. On this podcast, I will share my family's adventures on our one-acre homestead in the middle of small-town USA, from homeschooling and cooking to animals and everything in between.
We have a small farm. I've got livestock and a garden, and we do a lot of, from-scratch cooking for our family. One of the things that you deal with on any kind of farm with livestock or plants or anything that you raise is pests. And we do a lot of pest management around here. And I thought today I would share some of the things that I do to keep that under control. We can start with the garden, because if you don't have livestock and you're getting into the homesteading world, pest management in the garden is kind of, it's a good stepping stone or starting place. So let's dive into some pest management in the garden, and then I will share with you some of my pest management with my livestock. That way, you have my notes and you can keep up with it too. So in the garden, I do companion planting. It's where you plant two or three different plants together that work together in resisting disease and insect pressure. I've got to think about my words today. I think I've got a migraine coming on. And so if I stumble or trip over my words, y'all please forgive me. It's one of my migraine warnings. But companion planting is big for me. Like, I will plant tomatoes with my basil. For one, I find that my basil makes my tomatoes sweeter, and it smells so good. And I figure if I'm going to put the basil in my tomato sauce, they would grow really well together. And the basil also helps to ward off some of the insects that like tomato plants. So, tomato and basil, dill and cucumbers. I grow asparagus and strawberries. Asparagus and strawberry roots grow at different levels, and so they don't compete. And then, as the asparagus is coming up, the strawberry leaves can shade it. And when the asparagus comes up and it leaves out, it can shade the strawberries. It's actually pleasant. I like it. It's fun. Another thing that we do for tomato pest management, my kids love this one. So tomatoes are often plagued with hornworms. You've seen them. People talk about them. They're the big green gooey worms that eat your tomato plants overnight. Well, one of the fun things about hornworms is they glow in the dark under black light. So in the summertime, the kids and I will get out our black lights and we'll go worm hunting. We collect the worms in a bucket and then we toss them to the chickens, because the chickens love a sweet treat. And there's always plenty of worms. We can hunt every day for a week and we have plenty of worms for the chickens. But that's a fun one for the kids. I actually kind of enjoy it myself. Another thing that we do for some pest management is we employ decoy plants. We have found that some plants will attract insects more so than others, so we'll plant them at the ends of our crops. That way the insects will draw towards those and leave the main crop alone. One of my favorite is, I love Swiss chard, and I have always found that Swiss chard just gets decimated. The only person in my family that likes it, so I don't eat a ton of Swiss chard, but I love it. Same for kale and collards. We eat a lot of those. We love them. And usually there's a lot of insect pressure from that, but I have discovered that if I grow bok choy or tatsoi, both of them are an Asian green, I plant them near my kale and collards and Swiss chard, and the bugs pretty much leave the good stuff alone, and they go after the bok choy and the tatsoi. I've tried growing those for us to eat, but the insects, I don't know. One, there was a lot of bugs, and we just found that we're not fans of those greens. So instead of eating them, I just plant them for the insects to enjoy so that I can have the things that I actually want. And it seems to work pretty good. The bugs are happy, I'm happy, my plants are left mostly unscathed. Right now, my big issue is the deer. There's ways and ways to prevent deer, because that is a whole pest of a different ballgame. I would love to say that dogs are a great deterrent for the deer pest, but my dogs are kind of useless in that regard. Apparently, they don't care, or they don't see them, or they just have, I don't know. Generally, when we come outside and there's deer in the garden, one of us have to take off running after the deer before my dogs catch on and realize, hey, we should be chasing them away. Oh, dogs. My poor dogs are so special. I actually shared a video on Instagram, just a short reel of walking out into my garden, and there is a deer near my grapevines where she had just been snacking, and this is right up next to the house. The deer never used to come that close to the house. My grapevines were great until this year. Yeah, my dog was less than 50 feet from the deer and didn't even notice it. Again, my dogs are something. They're just not great guard dogs. In fact, we snuck up on them one day and they didn't even know we were in the yard until my husband touched them. These guys are labs. Maybe I need to look into a different dog. But a couple of things that might work and that I'm looking forward to employing soon is I've got to finish running the barbed wire around the fence. That'll kind of help deter them a little bit. We do have a hot wire that runs at the base of our fence that helps keep the raccoons and the possums and the rabbits and things out of the garden. But as far as the deer who can jump right over the fence and are not affected by the hot wire, I am considering getting some poles and hanging some flags. I saw these really pretty colored flags that I thought might just be one, really pretty, but the movement and colors might just, detract the deer from coming in. I have borrowed, and I need to order it. I keep putting it off, but I need to order it. There is this thing called the Defender. It hooks to your water hose, and it's motion activated, and it just shoots a stream of water when it, dog, goat, kid, deer come across the garden. It works pretty good. I just have to remember to turn it off if I plan to go in the garden, because there have been numerous times that I've gone in and completely forgotten it and got shot by a very cold stream of water because our water comes out very, very cold. But those are some options for deer. I mean, there's also like things you can spray on your garden that stink, and I'm not a fan of those. I'm just not a fan. I mean, it's an option. You can use it. Everybody can do their own thing, but it's not for me. My neighbor swears by neem oil in their garden to take care of their bugs and their critters. Again, it's not something that I'm going to use. I've considered it, but then I've, done some reading and things, and I just don't feel like it's the right fit for our family and our garden. But he swears by it. So if you're interested in neem oil, there's all kinds of research out there on it. A really fun one, and my kids think it's great when we do that. We can order beneficial insects in the mail. I don't know if you've ever tried that, but you can get ladybugs and praying mantises in the mail, and then you can put them in your garden and they can help keep the pest insect population down. Ladybugs love aphids, and I love ladybugs. So those are some great garden pest options that we use. Now, when it comes to our livestock, We do have, pest issues that we do deal with, such as fleas and worms and those kinds of things. I have rabbits, I have goats, I have ducks, I have chickens. I'm hoping to get some quail, and I've got a pig on the way. We are raising as much meat for our family as we can. My son, who's 8, has food allergies to conventionally raised chicken and pork, as well as soy. So, a lot of processed and commercial grown foods are off limits for us. So, we raise our own things. We've got our chickens for the eggs, which don't seem to bother him, but we haven't eaten the chickens. We are raising rabbits for meat. We have ducks who really are just pets at this point because my husband's allergic to duck eggs and they just don't have enough meat on their bones to justify raising them out for a family of 4. So we don't eat the ducks, we just enjoy watching the ducks. The goats we are raising to provide milk. Right now we have 2 goats, we have a third goat coming in about 4 or 5 weeks. Haven't named her yet. I gotta get to know her. But the 2 goats we currently have are Tater and Dolly. I'm really excited about them. Tater is our special goat. She will not be bred, and at least not on purpose. So I should have 2 goats in milk at all times, or at least 1 goat in milk at all times, because I plan to, breed both of my girls at different times of the year so that when one has babies, the other one is pregnant. That way, there's always milk. Dolly is about 9 months old. I can breed her after she turns 1, which will be November 11th. It'll probably be closer to, I don't know, December before I do that because we're going out of town for a wedding at some point this fall, and I don't want to. Have to deal with all of that. But we raise the goats for milk. We're getting ourselves a pig. If I can convince my husband, I might get 2, but we have to build a secure pen in our back acre, as we don't want them to get loose and, they could cause damage. But we're gonna raise our own pork for the freezer. Planning to raise them on a soy-free diet, so I'm going to be talking to a local ministry about collecting their organic scraps. They have an after-school program and they feed the hungry and stuff, and so they have a lot of things, leftovers that I can come get and feed to my chickens and my hogs to kind of help cut down on our feed bill. So, with all of the animals that I have a lot of parasite issues, parasite and pest issues that we have to deal with. So, I'm going to start with my chickens and the ducks because those are the most common animals for most homesteads. We have dealt with worms and we've dealt with mites in our chickens. Both are common. It's not unusual, but there are ways and ways of treating it. So, one of the things that we recently dealt with, we had an issue with worms. My chickens started getting worms. We're not sure where they got them from, but it was something we had to treat because it was affecting our egg production and, well, we needed the eggs. So I got a bottle of wormer from my veterinarian. If you don't have a livestock vet, get a livestock vet, or if your vet will work with you, talk to your vet. But I got a bottle of fenbendazole. Fenbendazole is a dewormer that I got for my goats, but is also usable on chickens, so it's a great cross species. I figured out how much water. I have a 5 gallon bucket. I did the math for dilution, and I just added, I think a couple cc's to their 5 gallon bucket of water. I did this twice over the next 2 weeks, and then my chickens would just take in the wormer when they got their water, and it worked beautifully. Another thing that we do is we add oregano to their food, and we we add capsaicin, crushed red pepper. Chickens can't taste the heat, so the capsaicin doesn't bother them, but it is a great protector for them, helps keep them clean. You can use corid on chickens. I've not really had an issue with coccidia with my chickens, which is great. So I don't generally keep corid on hand. I've just found that it hasn't been super useful for anything on my farm. We've had issues with coccidia in the past, but it was been my goats. So couple of other things real quick before I jump into goats is with my chickens. We do oregano, we do the fenbendazole or whatever it is in their water. I do crushed pepper mixed into their feed. Pumpkin is a great dewormer. Chickens love it. I have a couple of cans that are kind of on the more expired end. Or if I can get pumpkins after Halloween when people start throwing them out, people bring me their pumpkins. I toss them to the chickens. The chickens are happy. Everybody's happy. Pumpkin, pumpkin, pumpkin. It's great. There is also a company called Molly's Herbals, and you can use her mixtures. They're herbal mixtures that are designed to combat parasite loads. So those are some great options for your chickens and your ducks and your quail. There was a book. What was it? I would recommend getting a book. I've got several books on parasite management and livestock, and I don't have them with me. I will post those books in the show notes, and you can go check them out. Because they're good books to have. Now, for my rabbits and goats, we do deal with, worms, and we deal with coccidia, and we deal with things like that. There is a weed that grows along all of the ditch banks out here where we live in South Carolina. People don't really think about it because, again, it's a weed. The government planted it like several decades ago as a way to stop the erosion in the ditch banks. It's called Lespediza. There's a guy out here who actually has nothing but fields and fields of Lespediza hay. And I will find his information and also attach that to the show notes. But Lespediza is a weed. It grows wild all over here. I like to pick it when I go hiking, and I'll just bring handfuls of it back to my animals because it's great for both ruminant animals and for my rabbits. It has the ability to protect against coccidia and barber pole and just those kinds of barber pole is a worm. I have not had to deal with barber pole, and I'm hoping to keep it that way. But in the off chance that I have it, well, we can treat it. But I try to give my goats a 10% diet of Lespediza hay to their regular hay, so 90% regular hay, 10% Lespediza in their feed each week. This is kind of a maintenance dose. I do the same thing with my rabbits. It helps keep the coccidia and stuff away so that I don't have to treat it. Now, I've not had to deal with coccidia in rabbits. I know you can use corid. I'm sure that there are other options, and I'm going to have to research those. But as of now, I've not dealt with that, and I think it's great. I do keep corid. Well, I don't actually have any cord on me right now, but I need to get a bottle of cord. I don't really find much use in it, but it's good to have because you never know. But cord can be great to keep on hand. Now, when my goats had coccidia, because we have really dealt with the coccidia, y'all, one of the best things that you can do for parasite management, and I am telling you, this is a good secret and it'll save you money. Invest in a decent microscope and something called the McMaster slide. It is a two-chamber gridded microscope slide. okay? And learn how to do fecal examinations. If you can do fecal examinations, one, you can become familiar with what parasites are in your animals are dealing with. I know it means dealing with poo, but put on a pair of gloves and put down like a pee pad on your counter or table or wherever you're going to do your fecals and get it done. Because if you can develop a relationship with your vet where she knows or he knows that you know what you are talking about when you call them and say, "Hey, my goat has a coccidia count of 150 and a barber pole count of 2 and a hookworm count of 76," your vet will then just be able to say, "Okay, I know she knows what she's doing. Let me get you a prescription and go from there." And that's what I have done with my vet. I've learned how to do fecal examinations. I bought the microscope. I took a class. And now we regularly check our animals' feces. I can check my chickens. I can check my goats. I can check my rabbits. Which reminds me, I need to do that this Friday. I like to do fecals on Fridays, first Friday of the month. I'm a little late this month just because we've had a lot going on, but I need to do them again and just make sure everybody's good. This tells you where you need to adjust things, if you need to dose anybody. Learning how to do a fecal is super important, and I think it's something that everybody who has livestock needs to know. One of the things that I recently learned on the importance of doing fecals is I had some goats, or I have my goats, and I had one of them who passed away. I took fecal samples to my friend's house who was teaching me how to use the McMaster method to do fecals so I could, I'm learning. And we counted abnormally high levels of coccidia, both of us and the other lady. I mean, we all three looked, we counted, we all got similar numbers. So I'm like, "All right, well, let me call my vet." Well, I hadn't really established much of a relationship with my vet at this time. We were new patients. I was a new goat owner. She didn't know me very well. But I'm like, "Hey, I have a goat. I have two goats. Here's their count number. Here's their age. What do I need to do?" Well, because she didn't know me, she's like, "Well, I need you to bring me a sample so I can run a fecal examination." No problem. We can do that. So I took the remainder of the poop sample that I had had, and I took it to the vet's office, and they did a fecal float. It's a little bit different than the McMaster method, but their test came back zero. And I thought, that's just weird. I don't understand. So I got a fresh sample the next morning. I got up and I ran another fecal test. My friend came over to double check. We figured out how to use my phone to take pictures inside the microscope so that I could send pictures to my vet and say, "Hey, I ran a new fecal. Here are some pictures. These are the coccidia. What do I do?" That went a long way to gaining my vet's trust in knowing that I knew what I was doing and that I wasn't just trying to get meds for my goats. So she wrote me a prescription, drew me up a prescription for tortrazole or some, I don't know, something like that. I have to go look for it. It's a coccidia med. It's stronger than Coryd because Coryd doesn't work on goats anymore, or at least not that variety of goats. So I went and picked that up. My goats got a 3-day dose. They did really great. I highly recommend, learning fecals for that matter, because if I hadn't pushed the issue and gotten the treatment for my goats would have died of coccidia and I wouldn't have known any better. So that is really important. Learn how to do that. See if you can find Lespedeza. I know you can order seed. If you can order seed, plant yourself some and just let your animals free range. Goats love it. Rabbits love it. Even my chickens like it because the leaves fall off. I do recommend, though, if you're going to work with Lespedeza, you do not wear anything that is grabby, like sweaters, fleece, that that kind of stuff, because you will never get it out. It'll be there forever, forever. Those are some of the things that we do for pest and parasite management on our farm. If you have any thoughts or suggestions, please feel free to reach out. If for whatever reason I forget to post any links in my bio notes, shoot me a message. I'm a mama with a full schedule, and as I said earlier, I've probably got a migraine coming on, so my brain is not completely there. I'm sure you can hear that in my podcast. So, you know, little grace. But shoot me a link, and I can always edit and update and fix the show notes so that you can have the information that I said I would share. So I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your week. And until next time, be safe and be blessed.